Senate State Affairs come order. It looks like it's 9 o'clock on the 17th of March, 2016, St. Patrick's Day. Looks like we got lots of green on here. And, there's going to be physical harm from all of us if we try to pinch each other. So that we have only one bill before us today, and that is Senate Bill 144. I'd like to invite the department up to present the bill. It's our intent to hear the bill and then to set it aside to see if there's any other deliberations on it and bring it back and hopefully be able to exit it out of committee if there are no other issues. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. And committee members, for the record, my name is Steve Hatter. I'm a deputy commissioner for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We thank you for the opportunity to introduce Senate Bill 144. With me today is Heather Fair. She is our statewide right-of-way chief. The purpose of Senate Bill 144 is to bring Alaska statute in compliance with new federal law. When right-of-ways are acquired for public transportation purposes, federal law requires the department to compensate property owners, first for the value of the property and then also to provide fair and appropriate relocation benefits to displaced families, businesses, and farms. This legislation is about the relocation assistance. Under the federal initiative known as MAP 21, which was the Moving Ahead for Progress 21st Century, passed in 2012, our funding partners made it easier for affected parties to qualify for reimbursement, and they also increased the maximum relocation assistance available for those affected parties. So benefits paid to Alaskan families and businesses for this program are eligible for federal participation. So in sum, this proposed legislation enables more fair treatment of Alaskans who are impacted by relocation decisions. It brings us into full compliance with MAP 21, and it provides improved clarity regarding relocation assistance to our DOT project teams, our contractors, and our regulators. Again, we thank you very much for hearing this bill and considering passage. We're happy to respond to questions.
Why don't you tell us some more about this? I think give us some practical applications. Describe some projects, and I think you know where we all live. Tell us about projects in our districts and how this might affect them or might have affected. Bring us to the real world on this one.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, so as we look at projects, we try extremely hard not to have
tell
to
us which projects
people.
Have been challenging and where this is where it's been inadequate. Please just bring it down.
I don't have any. I think there's been a few over the years that have this statute would apply to, and again, typically we try to minimize relocating people. So the project designers, the engineers, really try very hard not to have to impact people's lives.
Can you come up with a project or where there was a challenge on the levels of relocation projects?
Okay. Do you have an idea?
There's been a couple of examples over the years where we've relocated. This bill would have provided them with more money had it been in place at the time. Can't think of anything in the last 2 years since this bill was passed through the federal government that would have been a big high-profile project. But occasionally we'll have to, we do acquisitions that are in strips, so we try not to have to relocate an entire family, business, or farm. So I can't think of any specifics right now off the hand that would have been affected by this legislation because it's still fairly new, so it'd be more going forward.
Well, there have been challenges on making property owners whole. Often the value of the property taken or parts of taken have often been the source of litigation or arbitration. Any examples of I find it hard to believe in all the projects we've done, all the billions we've thrown into projects that we can't come up with any challenges, or we're pushing this through as a DOT priority.
Mr. Chairman, this particular legislation doesn't speak to buying property, this speaks to.
I understand. Often it's an equation.
Yep.
It's the buying the property, the cost of moving your business, whether you're talking about the Atlanta Club, which it took extraordinary measures when it was moved from, I believe, Northern Lights Boulevard or where it was to Spinard. That was a group that had traditionally had refused government money and found themselves in an upside-down position because of the forced relocation. That was one example that was pretty glaring. That's been a couple of decades.
Mr. Chairman, what this allows us to do is comply with the higher federal limits, and so it's an opportunity for us to be more fair to Alaskans within the federal statute.
So what did you do prior? Were there any? Do you know of any situations where the state treasury made people more whole through general fund or appropriations or other DOT appropriations?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of cases of that nature. Do you?
Why don't you identify yourself for that?
Certainly. Heather Fair, statewide right-of-way chief for Department of Transportation. Chairman, there are certainly instances where we have used general funds to make up additional, what we call administrative settlements, which are beyond the acquisition by fair market value or the relocation payments. And we try to be very judicious about doing that. So generally, it's in an attempt to minimize extensive legal battles. If we know it's going to cost us more to have a legal battle, we'll negotiate a settlement. That's true.
Well, there's one I can think of. There was a project, the Briggs Bridge, the second bridge over Eagle River, not the most recent one, but that was completed in 1992. Most of the right-of-way acquisition and construction was done during a sharp downturn in Alaska's economy. And that was used. Relocation dollars were used to try to make folks whole to comply with federal law. So this bill would provide a little more leverage for you on relocation, maybe to pad that. I just wonder if you guys knew something we don't know about a downturn in the economy. that was a devastating occurrence for somebody. In that particular neighborhood, there were a lot of military families who couldn't ride it out. They had to leave Alaska. That's they were incredibly upside down on their real property, their number one investment in their life. It was being taken through a process which they really had no way to fight. And DOT really, I believe it was then Commissioner Hickey, I think, was involved in a lot of that. That was some of my recollections. That I can't believe there weren't other projects on at the same period of time. And I just want to. This might become more critical than we ever imagined if there's ongoing projects that are in the loop and all parts of the state, and everybody has their own anecdotes, and we'll be hearing and certainly this may be this sounds like this will be a good tool, but I'm trying to put a little history on the record, and I guess I'm cursed with having been around here a long time, and maybe you guys have cleaned house too much in DOT. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see there's a couple places where it now talks about 90 days versus 180 days. Could you just walk us through those scenarios where the time frame is halved?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I'll take a stab at it. This was, again, a result of MAP 21, so the federal legislators determined, looking nationwide, that the original 180 days was probably they were comfortable with reducing it to 90 days for an impacted party. I think the hard intent is to be as fair as possible to people impacted. It's generally not a good thing to people to be relocated because of a project. So it was the wisdom of the federal legislators to reduce that to 90 days. For DOT, our intent really is to comply with federal law and try to find those limits and follow those rules that are given to us in the federal legislation.
Yeah, I see in one location, and if you go to line 26, it talks about mortgage. And then line 14 on page 2 has a little different twist. Can you just explain to us so the average person knows what we're talking about?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, Heather Fair for DOT. Yes, essentially, the federal code sets forth assistance for mortgage payments if you own versus a tenant that rents, and different relocation expenses, and they're delineated out in the U.S. code as far as how we compensate different types of owners or tenants.
Okay, so that both of the day provisions actually aids the property owner, is that correct?
That's correct, Senator Huggins, through the chair. Primarily, this was designed to allow more people to qualify for benefits.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Looking at the fiscal note, there is a zero fiscal note in the operating budget, but then you say the increased relocation costs will be absorbed within existing capital program funding. And the bill is retroactive to October 1st of 2014, so do you have a sense of how much from 2014 until the present will be paying out and to whom?
Ms. Fair?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. Yes, Heather Fair for DOT. We have estimated that those eligible for the additional amount retroactive back to October 1st, 2014, totals a state share of about $12,000. So it's very minimal to the state.
And then
Senator Wilikowski.
As we move forward, do you have a sense of how much would be the cost per year, or I don't know how you might do this, but try to get a sense.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. Again, I would just emphasize the project designers try very hard not to have to relocate people, so we try to keep those costs to a minimum. It's really hard to estimate out in the future based on who might be impacted. Generally speaking, it's not a large number. What we want to do is comply with federal law, hit those maximums so we're most fair to Alaskans and that we're in compliance with federal law. So again, I think the intent of the department is to minimize impact to Alaskans. We're all Alaskans, and we don't want to impact people unfairly, and then we want to make sure we're in compliance with federal law, and then our own state statute allows us to comply to those maximum numbers.
Thank you. I just want to go back to sections 3 and 4, and I know you've already talked a little bit about there. You're deleting the limits and of 10,000 and 2,500, and at the zero fiscal note, you said you intend to absorb that from the CIP amount. But by deleting those limits, taking the other side of the issue, what exposure are you putting the state in?
Mr. Chairman, the way I'd answer that question, we are limited to what the federal limits are, and those will change through federal legislation as they update the Highway Act in the future and other legislation related. I think it's the intent of the federal agencies to increase those limits through regulation now instead of by legislation. So they're attempting to get that done. So what this allows us to do is not have to come back and update this legislation each time they make a change. We're always going to be subject to the federal limits, and they set those for us.
We've had a lot of projects, especially local governments have been the administrators of projects. So the municipality of Anchorage or the Mat-Su Borough have done a lot of the road projects, and they've been involved in that. What is the tell me what the department's intent? Whether you intend to have this apply to these entirely state-funded, all general fund projects?
Senator,
I don't think we're going to be funding too many of those in the future, but we do have a lot of those still out.
Mr. Chairman, Heather Fair for DOT. Yes, the intent is that we treat everyone fairly, and so the expectation of the public certainly is that we would pay the same amounts for state projects as we would for a federal project. Again, we relocate very few folks. We have an iterative design process to try and minimize relocations, so we don't anticipate it's going to be a large expense to the state, and I don't know that we have any projects at this point in time that are state-funded that we're planning to have relocations.
Yeah, and that I imagine that depends up to how much people think the right-of-way acquisition affects their ability to live there. You might have a different interpretation than the owner does. They may have lost their desirability or willingness to want to live there, and you've taken whether it's a project being run by a borough or municipality or the state, that's certainly a subject. A project can ruin somebody's desire to have a quality of life somewhere. And that's certainly the type of thing that's litigated, and might that fall into a relocation expense?
Mr. Chairman, the relocation expense is that's specific to, you know, moving someone and making sure that as to the limits of the federal limits that they're made whole. The litigation piece is
someone or something. You mentioned farms in your introduction, and that's an activity. Maybe you may not be able to, if somebody is running livestock in a certain area, it may change your nature of being able to do that. I'm just trying to think. All of us have very, well, some of us are in the municipality, little square districts, and the rest of us have pretty broad expanses with a lot of different types of activities. Like, we have too many cattle ranches in Anchorage. That was from Senator Foghill.
I tried to go back and read the whole U.S. Code. I can tell you that's a tough one for a tough sled. However, in the Section 2 of this, it's repealed and reenacted, and that usually gets my attention enough to ask why. And it looks like the difference is between receiving moving expenses and receiving a fixed payment. Give me some rationale for that.
Certainly. Senator Coghill through the chair. Heather Fair for DOT. Yes, essentially Section 2 of the bill being repealed and reenacted simplifies the language and refers us to the federal code, and that way there's less opportunity for misinterpretation or duplicative errors. And so the same provisions are still in place, but now the federal government has increased the amount that someone can receive in terms of actual moving expenses or what they call a one-time fixed payment. So there's different qualifications for those, and we're using our bill to simplify and not have to come back to the legislature when that changes again to refer straight to the federal code on the requirements that we have to use to fulfill our funding partners agreements.
Another question. Anytime we assume requirements of a U.S. code in our law, once that code changes, my guess is that number would change and we'd have to come back for a revision, or does it automatically change the way we do business and our law become unworkable?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, by referring to the U.S. code and our statute, then we're covered by referring to that, so we don't have to come back and rewrite the state statute.
Mr. Chairman, my question is, what if they change the code? Do we have to go then back and revise this number? Is this, for example, if they change the U.S. code under the same number, then our law could become whipsawed by federal law? I just want to know, do they have to come back to us and say it's changed and therefore the number changed and you have to go back to your statute and look at it?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, I just want to emphasize this. As we work through complying with federal law, we're in regular conversations with our federal partners. FHWA would be a good example in this case. And as we work with them through this, constant conversation about, you know, applicability and then making sure we're in compliance. The intent of this update to this statute is to avoid the whipsawing so that we get something that's workable, it's streamlined, and in compliance with federal law, so that we don't have to come back year after year as things change. And the feds are really interested in getting some of these limits put into the regulatory process so they can change it through that process, and then we just comply with the numbers that are set by those limits.
And my fear, Mr. Chairman, quite often is when it works good, it's nice. Mm-hmm. When it works badly, it's not good. And so by linking our statutes to federal code, sometimes we find ourselves in very awkward positions with our people. So I just wanted to say that out loud.
Thanks. We're not going to pass this bill out today. Maybe you can bring us back some historical relocation issues. Just if you need any help, I think Commissioner Sam Cotton, he works for the governor, and AGDC Commissioners Rick Halford would probably be able to tell you about the Eagle River Project. And I think you have internal sources. It was right in the midst of our last large economic downturn, and we had a lot of families that were being forced to relocate and take a big hit on their mortgages. And there was a mechanism where the relocation costs were increased somehow, and maybe you can tell us how those were done. And that'll give us some guidance of what we might be opening up here as well. It sounds like good policy, but we want to make sure we know in these times what it costs and what potential obligations we may be putting on. If you have one of our citizens that's being unfairly treated, and we have a financial mechanical way to do it, I think there's going to be certainly a lot of very appropriate pressure applied to do that. And I just want to make sure what you guys are asking for.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're happy to do that.
Are there any other questions? We only had this bill up today because just as a safety in case we had the other permanent fund bill. So this is a rarity where we don't have a full day of activity. And I think this will probably be our last time we're in a situation like this. And I'm really glad that's all we're dealing with today is this bill. But looking forward to bring this back fairly soon. If you can get those responses, send them to us and we'll distribute them. And any other questions that members have, you know how to get hold of these folks. And maybe I'm centrically focused on this because we live in one of the fastest growing areas, and we've been trying to catch up on roads and things. So it probably impacts those of us right outside of the Anchorage Bowl a little more. So it's been a real life situation for a lot of us. And with that, are there any other issues to come before? We'll set this aside and look forward to more robust schedules on bills in the near future. And we might give a warning. We might have one earlier in the morning. I would like to have some of the deal with our appointees and have our confirmation hearings. I'd like to make sure we have a very set time and take our citizen appointees first in proceedings. So we're going to try to do that. We'll let you guys know sometime in this afternoon when we release the schedule and into the next week. Though we might have one of those each week, and just wanted to fair warn folks. With that, thanks everybody for being here. We will stand in adjournment.